I was dead from wrong, and I'll die in here again.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Saturday Night Trivia broadcast with your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Pert. Now, those of you new just tuning in to us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Before you hit that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout all we do here in the Defenders 7. We're more than just a group. We consider ourselves one big extended family. Check out our website by typing all lowercase letters, www.defenders7.com. On our website, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from our store and any money we bring in from donations go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in the time of need. That's right, and it is a tax write-off, so by all means, help us to help you and your community purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Every bit helps. It's the only way we're able to do what we do here. Check out our YouTube page. Be sure to subscribe. We're also on MeWe. If you click on Communities and scroll down, Defenders 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. That's right, folks. We're not a militia. We are a Humanitarian Patriot Group. LLC, nonprofit organization. Soon to hopefully be a 501c3. Now, for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in, express your thoughts, your opinions. So, that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Or log into our Blog Talk chat room. That's also live during the broadcasts. Come have some fun. And I now bring in your host, our Colonel, Miss Kimberly Burdett.
Hi ho.
Hody hi.
So, I just want to say one thing before we get started. The New York Rangers can eat a bag of dick. That's all I got to say. I'm going to tell you something. The first, yes, oh, by the way, I am a Hurricanes fan, and if you don't like Carolina Hurricanes, you can eat a bag of dick. I really don't care. No, they played the Bruins in the first round. The Hurricanes did, right? I mean, they whooped their ass. 5-1, 5-1, 4-1. They go fucking New York. I shit you not. The first game went to overtime. It was 1-1. And then the Canes scored in overtime. Last night, it was awful. I mean, what the hell? But yeah, and I was so pissed. That's why I was posting all that random shit last night. Freaking the Canes got a double minor because one of the guys' stick went up and it went up and hit the guy, one of the Rangers, in the face, which I know is high sticking. And yeah, whatever. And he was crying like a little bitch, and that's why I got a little, I don't know, rowdy in my office last night. But it was awesome. They they actually scored with they went to overtime. I think it was just last night, not the first game. They scored with 2 seconds left in the game.
And joining us is our major pain in the ass.
Oh, she's just sitting on. Ow!
Yep.
So, needless to say, today all I've been doing is yard work, and I put together a gazebo, which was so much fun. they're always so much fun. And tomorrow I get to put together the grill, I think. So I got a question for you guys. Charcoal?
Yeah.
Or propane?
Yeah.
Charcoal.
Just don't ask Lorna for pointers.
Yeah, I know. You mean cooking or putting charcoal. Shit together?
Putting
Hey, I can
shit
put
together
things together maybe the
cooking.
Wrong way the first time, but the second time is always good. And you always have spare parts or it ain't put together right.
Yeah, and it rocks back and forth.
Hey, my dad, I had to fix my brother's car, and this was back in early 2000 after we moved down from when we lived in New Hampshire, we moved to Georgia, and my dad didn't have a car, so my brother, he gave him his old red Buick Skylark or whatever the fuck, I don't know what it was. Well, anyway, he had to replace the ignition switch. And my dad went to China, apparently, to fix the problem, because instead of pulling the steering wheel off, you know, if you pull the steering wheel off, and all you have to do is there's a long screw that's in the steering column, and you just undo that, and you pop it out, and you pop the ignition out. No, my dad had me drop the whole steering column because that's what the book said to do. And he had a handful of parts left over. And I'm like, do you think these are valuable screws to keep the car from falling apart? He goes, I don't know. I'm like, gee, thanks. And I ended up driving it. So the gear shift, I kid you not, the gear shift, if something happened to it, so instead of, you know, like a normal gear shift, you pull it down, you see where it goes, you know, as one dipshit said, the Prindle, you had to pull a little rod and guess what gear the car was in. So, yes, the value of having extra screws may not always be a good thing. Borna.
I seen a cool thing today. I'm on my way back from town, and I see cop lights. Oh, God, there must have been 5-10 cop cars all lit up, one block in traffic. And here it was because Savannah's school won some sporting event. They escorted them. Honking horns. There's people alongside the road with banners.
That's cool. Tennessee
yeah,
is like
never,
that.
Yeah. And then I seen a truckload
they're
of kids
big on,
in the back.
They're big on that.
Oh, yeah.
On their high school kids. So the trivia.
You still there? Hello?
I think she got booted.
Oh, I thought I did. Because I think we're getting a storm coming in. Oh! And I finally got
Come
all
on,
them
Jimmy.
Stinking leaves. I finally got all them stinking leaves burnt.
Took you long enough.
I know. Well, stinking rain. It's got to rain like every other night. then they get soaked, and then you can't really burn them when they're wet because of the royal pain in the ass. But got her done now. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
She might not
just
know she got booted. She's probably still talking.
That, probably.
Did your messenger tell her she's not on?
Yeah, I'm looking at the switchboard right now. It's just me and you.
Huh.
There she is.
I'm sitting there talking to myself, and I'm like, anytime now, guys, you can answer the question. Anytime.
Okay,
and I looked down.
We didn't hear the question.
You know what? I wasn't even looking at my phone. Okay.
Oh,
so
my God.
You've been hiking for a few hours in the cold weather. When your friend says, hey, look, man, I can't feel my feet. You know, so what are you going to do? So you got three choices. You have them put on another pair of socks and rest for a half an hour. You remove their socks and shoes and reheat their feet using warm water. Or you build a fire and have them put their feet near the fire to reheat their feet.
Hey.
What do you do? Huh?
Hey.
Okay. Lorna?
I'm going to say... What was the second answer?
Remove the shoes and socks and reheat their feet using warm water.
I would say reheat their feet, but not using warm water.
Okay. So, you're both wrong. I mean, actually, no, Lorna's right, but Bobby, you're wrong, and I have an issue with this answer. So you would remove their shoes and socks, but of all of the survival stuff that we've read, you would build a fire and reheat their feet next to the fire, not like right directly on it. But that's not the answer. You would reheat their feet using warm water, but here's the thing. How the hell are you going to get warm water?
On the fire.
That's why I said you changed the socks.
Well, no, that one said put on another pair. It didn't say take them off, which you should do. You should, if they're wet, if they're cold and wet, you take the cold and wet socks off. That's why it's always important to have dry socks. But how are you going to reheat their feet with warm water if you're out in the cold? That's why I'm saying so many questions. There's always two rightest answers. But it is true. I would take off the wet socks, put on dry socks. You build a fire, and you sit next to the fire. I'm going to argue that question.
Yeah.
Because it also says if you get frostbite, you are not going to use warm water to heat up their feet.
Nope.
Because you'll damage the skin. So that's why I don't agree with that. That's why I'm saying I'm arguing that that's a wrong answer. So whoever made this question, they're wrong.
I say warm them up, but not with water, and you don't want them right on the fire either.
No, I mean, if you have a big enough fire, you could sit a couple feet away and put the dry socks, take the wet ones off, put the dry ones on. And actually, I would take the wet socks, put them next to the fire, and dry them and put them up. You've been hiking all day again in the sun this time, and your friend starts complaining of a severe headache and starts mumbling incoherently like Weathers does. So what are you going to do? Okay, now there's three answers, but this one is a straightforward answer. You move them into the shade, remove their clothing, elevate their feet, and apply a cold compress to their armpits and groin. You move them to the shade, remove their clothes, elevate their feet, and give them aspirin. Remove, put them in the shade, remove the clothing, and vigorously rub them with rubbing alcohol on their body.
One. First one.
Bobby?
Yeah, the first one.
Okay, so let's see our answer. Oh, by the way, you got to actually pick the answers. Yes, woohoo, we're right. You okay, so all three answers have the right part, but it's the last part. I wouldn't give them aspirin because you have no idea if they can even have aspirin. And so that's why you wouldn't do that. And you don't want to rub alcohol on them because all that's going to do is dry them out. So, okay. Next question. No! Oh, I hate this. My internet has gone off stupid. Okay, around the campfire, apparently you must have been drinking. You trip and fall into the fire and burn your cap. What do you do? One, don't drink near a fire because that's real stupid.
You trip and fall in what?
A fire.
Oh. I actually knew somebody
and you burn
that did
your
that.
Leg.
I knew somebody that did that, and he burnt the. I knew somebody that did that, and he burnt the shit out of his hands.
Well, okay, here's the thing, which is one reason why. If you have a bonfire, don't drink next to it. Yeah, I know it's pretty cool, but you know, honestly, I've done it myself, and I stood next to the fire and burnt my shoes, which is why I don't drink and near a fire anymore. But honestly, you got to be careful when you're drinking. And especially in water or mixed fire. But anywho, use your lotions in your backpack to cool the burn and then wrap it in a clean gauze. Apply ice to the burn and wrap it in clean gauze. And you cool the burn using clean water or burn gel from your first aid kit and wrap the burn in clean gauze.
Cold water is not good for it. That shocks it, I believe. So I think you got to clean it and put gauze on it.
Okay, well, they all say put gauze on it. So we know it's not the second one because you don't want to put ice on a burn because all you're going to do is burn the skin even more. It's either A or C.
What was A?
A was use the lotions in your backpack to cool the burn and then wrap it in a clean gauze. And C is you cool the burn using clean water or burn gel and gauze.
C.
It is C. You don't want to put lotions on it because of the perfumes and all of that. And it could actually burn more. Because remember back in the day, some of the old wives' tales, whenever you got, when you got burnt, they would say, rub some lard on it, rub butter on it, you know, Crisco and all that. All you're doing is adding fuel to the fire, in a sense. You literally are. And you're actually burning your skin even more. So you would want to use, and not cold water, use lukewarm, like room temperature water to clean it. And then, or you can use burn gel. But you're going to really want to rinse it off so before you even did the burn gel. But that is what you should do. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to choose the answer because it won't go anywhere. Ta-da! I have a little bell for the quiz. It's times when you answer it right. Okay. A friend bangs her head during a bad fall. 20 minutes later, you notice a slight bloody discharge coming from their ear. What do you do? This is a doozy. Yet again, hopefully your friend wasn't drinking and doing stupid shit.
Take him to the doctor.
So,
take him to the doctor.
Well, yes. I mean, but here's the thing. Well, what if you're out in the middle of Timbuktu? You ain't going anywhere. Apply a cold compress to the head and rest for the remainder of the day. Apply a bandage to their ear and rest for the remainder of the day. You give them pain reliever and wrap them in blankets to keep them warm for the remainder of the day.
Well, Not the Band-Aid on the ear. That's not it. It's the second one.
That's the bandage to their ear.
Oh, the other one, the bandage where the wound is.
The cold compress?
Yeah.
Okay, Bobby, what do you say?
Yeah, same.
The same? Okay, that's what we're going to go with. We're going to go with the cold compress to the head. No!
What?
Yeah.
They want you to.
You give them pain reliever, wrap them in a blanket, and keep them warm for the rest of the day. I have issues with that.
I do, too. That's BS.
Yeah, so it says a bloody, watery drink discharge from the ear or nose could be a sign of a concussion. Never try to stop the discharge or tilt the head so it can't drain, which we know that's true. This can lead to further complications or infections. But see, what I have a problem with, yes, you use a blanket for shock, okay? The whole thing about the pain reliever is, I don't know, it is because of the trauma thing. Because whenever you do something and you go to the hospital, the first thing you're not going to do is have you drink or eat anything by mouth. And they'll give you pain medication by injection. Damn, that's an icky question. I don't like it. So your hiking buddy has a major fall. Look, if you have a hiking buddy like this, you need new friends. That's all I got to say. Your hiking buddy has a major fall and injures their leg really bad. The limb is disfigured, and they're unable to place any weight on the leg. There is a pulse in the leg, and it's warm. What do you do? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. You apply a tourniquet between the injury and the heart and call for help. You apply a splint above and below the injury and call for help. You hold your friend down and try to straighten the leg by pulling on it and then call for help. Dear God, all of those answers are horrible. God.
I go with the first one.
The first one?
I'd say the second.
It's the second one. Okay, because wait a minute. Okay, first of all, the whole thing about the tourniquet, it's going to be like 2 inches, if not, depending on, depends on where you went to school. But when I was in the military, when I was in the Army, they taught us it was like 2 inches above. Some people say it's 4, but look, it's between 2 and 4 inches above the wound. But you want it, you know, you don't want it so far up because you don't want to lose a leg. But I don't even know why they said the heart. But let's do the splint above. Actually, that's what it is. Above and below. But the thing is, you would actually just splint the whole leg. Why would you have two different splints? That's retarded. You would actually.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
I mean, because here's the thing. It's called the pedal pulse, and it's on top of your foot. If you take your two middle fingers, not your thumb, because you have a pulse in your own damn thumb. If you take your two fingers and touch the top of your foot, just move around on the top, you will feel a pulse on the top, and that's called the pedal pulse, right? What they're saying is if you feel that pulse down there, you know blood is getting down there, okay? And the leg is still warm, which is why you don't need to attempt to straighten it. You only attempt to straighten the leg if it's blue and cold without a pulse, because then that would save the limb. So, yeah, I mean, the thing about the tourniquet, you only do the tourniquet as if they're hemorrhaging, you know, and that's the only time you would do it. And don't do it for a scrape or a scratch, you know, for the love of God. As we've all seen some videos of some people doing that. Over the course of a long hike, your friend has been sweating profusely and complaining of headaches. What do? Give him aspirin. Keep going. It's just a little headache. Sounds like the Army. Drink water and drive on. You tell them to drink more water. You check from heat exhaustion and rest for a few minutes. You drop salt in water and have them sip on it. You check for signs of heat exhaustion and rest until the headache subsides. Ooh, that's a tricky one.
I'm going to go with
and
one.
And we all know because it's not number one, so don't even ask.
Oh.
I know. Okay, here's the thing. Give them a Tylenol or Motrin is a good idea, whatever. But if they're sweating profusely, and complaining of headaches, you are pushing heat exhaustion or heat stroke. Okay, so what do you tell them to do? Do you give them water and check for heat exhaustion and rest for a few minutes? Or do you drop some salt and water and have them sip on it and check for signs of heat exhaustion and rest until the headache subsides?
First one.
Bobby?
The last one.
What do you say?
Last one.
You think it's the last one?
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to go with Bobby's answer, and it is right. Adding salt to water rebalances the body if you've been sweating, and just drinking more water will not help. Headaches on the trail can have many causes, such as dehydration or lack of adequate food, constipation, and excessive sweating. The only thing I had, it's right, but the salt. If you drop a little salt in water, wouldn't that cause them to dehydrate more?
That's what I was thinking.
Or are they talking like a minuscule amount for like electrolytes?
I think a minuscule amount.
Okay. They are right, though. Because once you get to the point of severe dehydration, drinking water is not going to help because of the osmosis and all that cool shit that has to do with the water getting past the cells. And that's when you have to go into electrolytes. But, it doesn't say how much salt to add. So it just says you drop salt in water, but I would say very little. All right. You're hiking in cold weather. Look, if you're hiking in cold weather, you need to be slapped, first of all. And only wearing a long sleeve shirt. Although you thought all that hiking would keep you warm, you began to shiver uncontrollably. Your fingertips are turning a pale blue, and you're finding it hard to concentrate. What do? You decide to pick up the pace. Hold on. You decide to pick up the pace and heat up the body. You stop, get a fire going, and bundle up in a sleeping bag or emergency blanket. You sip on hot beverages until you start to feel better. You stop, get a fire going, and have a beer, knowing the alcohol warms you up. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. There's only one right answer.
Two, but
usually
three sounds
the longest
good.
One. Huh?
Number two, but three sounds good.
Okay. Two is the right answer. It's a gimme. But here's the thing. One is not going to do it because if you pick up the pace, one, you're just going to become even more exhausted. If you can't concentrate, you're not going to want to walk faster, and that's not going to do it. Okay. Now, both two and three, yes, is right. They start a fire. Okay, that's one thing to do. So alcohol does heat up the body, but it also dehydrates you, which is why, yes, in the summertime, you have barbecues, you have whatever, you're on the lake, you drink a beer, whatever, but you also drink water at the same time. You know, I know that's a faux pas in drinking world, but yeah. But yes, you would sip on. I wouldn't say hot beverages. I would say warm, because you don't want to go from one extreme to the other.
No.
Because when you have hypothermia, they're not gonna. They put heated blankets on you, like when you go to the hospital, or those shiny little astronaut looking things, and they actually will warm up IV fluids just enough. I mean, just enough to warm. To warm you up that way. You never want to go from hypothermia too hot, because you'll do more damage to your body. So let me see. Oh, wow. This is saying alcohol doesn't warm the body. Despite the popular belief, I think that's horseshit, because it really does. Because that's why people always talk about getting hot when they drink. I don't know. I don't know if it has anything to do with alcohol. Somebody could tell me I'm wrong. Whatever. Okay, while hiking, you mistakenly pick up a rock and are bitten by a snake on the hand. First of all, you shouldn't be doing stupid shit like that. You kick the rock. You don't want to friggin' pick it up with the hand. You don't get a good look at the snake, and you don't have a snake bite kit with you. What do?
Stop, drop, and roll.
Stop, drop, and roll. One, depending on where you're at, I would just say kiss your ass goodbye, and, you know, if you're far enough away, you know, you're SOL. But anywho, there is an answer. You minimize movement, and you keep your hand below your heart, mark the edge of the swelling with a pen, and send your friend for help. You have your friend cut an X over the wound and suck the poison out and remain calm and keep your hand below your heart, which is disgusting. I've heard about that. You apply ice to the wound and take an aspirin for the pain. You remain calm and send your friend for help.
It could be one or three.
We all know. We all know it's not number two. We've all heard that before. You know, suck the poison out. So, Bobby, what do you say?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I say three.
Three? Okay. Let's go with three. We're going to go with three. We are wrong, damn it.
I said one or
three. I don't see why you would. Okay, well, here's the thing. You minimize movement, which is true, because you don't want your heart pumping. And the calmer you stay, of course, you know, the point. But just keep your hand below your heart, which is true. Mark the edge of the swelling with a pen and send your friend for help. One, you hope you have a pen. So their thing is cutting the wound, sucking the venom, and ice and aspirin will not help. Huh. Only slowing down the poison by staying calm and keeping the injury below the heart is effective. A tourniquet is usually not helpful at slowing down venom. It could cause further injuries by stopping the circulation. Well, nobody said anything about damn tourniquet, because I sure know so I didn't. But, so apparently you don't put ice on it or take aspirin. So, but the ice would be good for the swelling, though. So, I don't know.
And I
whatever.
I think the ice slows it from traveling, too.
I know, so I don't really, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, the aspirin thins the blood, so, and it's not really, aspirin's not really a good pain reliever anyway, because that just thins blood anyway. But,
no,
my
brother's friends down at the creek's dogs got bitten by, I believe, water moccasin twice in the face, and he didn't do nothing for him, and he was fine.
Oh, yeah. Hold on a second. I'm looking at something else, because I don't agree. Apparently? No, you don't. So, ice is not a good thing on a snake bite, because it causes the tiny blood vessels to constrict, and when paired with the viper venom, this can result in a significant tissue damage to the body. Again, it's preferable to allow the swelling to occur. Huh. So you want the inflammation because it's going to fight the venom. So therefore, see, they don't even go into completely SUI, and that's why. So you do not put ice on a snake bite.
Huh.
All right. Okay, look, if you're going to do this, you know what? You deserve what you get. A game of impromptu leapfrog on the trail has caused you to sprain your ankle. What do? Jesus, I don't know. Push your friend off the trail. Take aspirin, wrapped ankle, continue hiking. You apply a heat compress for the pain and decide to stay put for the rest of the day. Apply the cold compress for the first 24 hours to reduce swelling. Elevate the foot and stay put until the pain subsides.
That one.
Yet again. Yeah, you know why? One, longest answer is always, usually 99% of the time, the rightest answer. And yes, I use the word rightest answer because that's the way it is. You don't put heat on a sprain. You put that on a strain. But you would put a cold compress on it. Okay, this says stay put for 24 hours, or I mean until the pain subsides. I don't know about you guys, but when I sprained an ankle, it lasted a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So basically is ice, rest, ice, compress, and elevate. Rice. Here's a bowl of rice, not shut up. And that's what they used to tell us in the military. Here's your Motrin and your water, not go away. I know it's sad, but that's just what we did. You've been hiking the perimeter of a mountain lake in full sun. Your eyes are burning and tearing, and you're seeing halos around objects and have a headache. What do? Stop hiking. Okay?
Stop.
Really, you suck at
stop
it.
Stop walking around. One of these times trying to get that right?
Uh-huh.
I said, stop, drop, and roll. One of these times that's going to be the correct answer.
Stop, drop, and roll is for fire. Here's what they listen. You bandage your eyes with a cold compress. Take a pain reliever for the pain or rest until your vision returns to normal. You get your hat out of your pack. Pull it down far over your eyes and continue hiking. You use eye drops. Take a pain reliever for the pain and cover up with a hat and sunglasses. First of all, before we even pick an answer, you need to be punched in the head because you should have had your hat off to begin with. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys thought about getting sarcastic answers while we did these, but this is what you get. So, and in this case, I'm sorry, but it's not the longest answer. So what do you guys say?
It's
the third one.
Stop and roll.
Stop and roll. This might be the longest one. I don't know. But
Rub dirt on it.
Rub some dirt on
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Rub some dirt on it
is going to be one of these answers eventually.
That'll fix anything.
Hey, it fixed a whole lot of problems back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
So, I say it's the third one, the eye drops, pain reliever, and cover up with a hat and sunglasses. But what
yeah.
do you guys say? All right, we're going to go with that one.
What was the other two answers?
No, it was the first one. Okay, we're going to have issues with this. So it was the first one. Bandage your eyes with a cold compress, take pain reliever for the pain, and rest until your vision returns to normal. Okay. A corneal flash burn is commonly caused by sunlight reflecting off snow or water, which is true. If treated properly, vision will return to normal within 18 hours. See a doctor if you're unable to control the pain with pain relievers. You see flashing spots or lights, your vision remains blurry. But here's why I'm arguing with this. There's no sunglass. You should have a hat and sunglasses, which is why the third one, I'm guessing the eye drops is the reason why it's not the right answer, but you should put on eyeglasses or sunglasses and a hat. And what they're saying is normal vision within 18 hours. What are you going to do, sit up there on the mountain for 18 hours in
right.
the same spot? No. I know. So I say common sense. Look, if you can't fly, and the thing is about where are you going to get a cold compress? See, some of these questions, I mean, it's got a little bit of each in each answer, but in all honesty, I would flush your eyes to get rid of the whatever and freaking hat.
You get it at the ice machine that's right on the trail.
You know what? I'm starting to believe that. some of these answers, I swear. On your first, here it is. On your first day of hiking, see, and that's the indicator right there. Your very first day, because apparently these are amateur hikers and they're fucking stupid. So on your first day of hiking, you take off your shoes and notice the blister on your heel. What do? Pack your shit up like a little bitch and go back home. That's what this generation would do. You cut a hole in a piece of moleskin and secure it in place over the blister. You pick at the blister until it breaks and then pull the skin to let it breathe. God, that stuff is... You leave the blister alone, it'll eventually harden and become a callus, and this is how you prevent blisters in the future. So, what is it?
I rub dirt on it.
Rub some dirt on it. Stop, drop, and roll. I can guarantee it's probably number one. And it is. So, here's the thing. If you've been in the military, moleskin is your friend. And you will go through a lot of moleskin. The thing is, if you have it with you, that's the whole thing. So remember, if you feel the need to break the blister, do so with a sterile needle. Leave the skin in place and use an antiseptic wipe and bandage. Blisters can become easily infected, which is true. So if it's so huge, yes, you can do it. And always pop it on the bottom where it will drain. But like it says, use alcohol or something to disinfect it. And then I would cover it. But you never pick it until it breaks. And you never pull off the skin because that skin underneath is raw. And it's going to be worse. But you're also right, Lorna. If you leave it alone, it does callus. But that doesn't prevent blisters because they come back.
Yeah,
they do. But they do. And actually, you know, we honestly, what we used when if we didn't have moleskin, the guys would actually get, we used to have panty liner and that's what they would use because we didn't have moleskin and basic training. And we were, and the drill sergeants were like flipping shit. Why the hell? And they didn't realize that, I don't know if they realized it or not, but we figured it out to put the sticky side to your sock and the cotton side to your, to where the blister was, and it works just as good. So, yeah, there's your little useless bit of knowledge about using panty liners. So, you're stung by a bee while hiking and remove the stinger. 15 minutes later, you notice you're having trouble catching your breath, and your lips feel puffy. What do? Kiss your ass goodbye. You're having anaphylactic shock, by the way. You've never been allergic to bee stings in the past, so you sit down with your friend and wait for it to pass. Take aspirin, disinfect a sting bite, and call for help. You take the antihistamine and your first aid kit and call for help.
Three.
It is three, which is why it's very important to carry Benadryl or diphenhydramine in your first aid kit. Because, and this is very serious now, if you get stung by this is by anything, a bee, a wasp, a hornet, it could be a poison ivy, poison oak, any of that shit. It doesn't matter. If you have, if you can't breathe, your tongue swells, your throat swells, and shit like that, and you break out in welts, you're in anaphylactic shock. So the first thing you're going to do, yes, is get out that Benadryl and take it. Now, here's the thing. How are you going to take Benadryl if your throat's swollen? That's why you have liquid Benadryl as well as Benadryl pills. because that's what you're going to do. And then once you get help, they'll give you epinephrine and more Benadryl and shit. I forgot what the third ingredient is that they give you. And then you're going to want to go to an allergy doctor, get tested, and keep an EpiPen from now on whenever you, you know, go out. So, but so antihistamines slow down the allergic reaction in time for you to get help. And then that's when you get the, like I said, you get the epinephrine and I forgot what the other ingredient is. Sorry, guys. What's the adult ratio, or what's the ratio for adult CPR? 2 breaths, 30 pumps, 5 breaths, 30 pumps, 2 breaths, 15.
The third?
Okay. No, it's 2 and 30. Here's the thing. It's 2 and 15 for two people, and this is why I don't agree with it. Oh, now this is saying it's the same for one person or two. See, and I just took it, and for two people, it was 2 and 15. So apparently it's changed again. My bad, guys. But it's 2 and 30. Hold on. Let me make sure this. For adults. They changed this. It is 30 and 2. They changed it again. Little bastards. And it's 30 and 2. See why it's important to check? But all in all honesty, if you don't know CPR, they don't want you to, if you've never done it and you don't know how to do it, they're saying just do 100 chest compressions and not even do the rescue breathing, because if you do the rescue breathing wrong, you can do damage to their lungs. So that's what they're saying. As long as you're getting that heart, the blood pumping, that's all that matters. And yes, when you do go get your CPR license, you will practice that 100 rescue, the compressions, and you get worn out. So when you start CPR, be prepared to do it for at least 4 to 5 cycles, and it does wear you out. So anyway, while cutting a rope, you slip and cut your arm near the wrist real badly. Blood is pumping from the wound. What do you do? Stop cutting damn rope. That's all I know. Elevate your arm and wait for the bleeding to stop. Take knives away from Lorna because she cuts herself. Apply direct pressure to the wound and elevate the arm.
Direct pressure.
Rub some dirt in it.
Stop, drop, and roll.
We lost her again.
We lost her.
Let's see how long it takes her to get back on this time.
I know.
She's probably still yapping away.
Probably. Boy, if I get this one wrong with all the times I've cut myself.
Sorry. I don't know why I keep getting dropped tonight. This place sucks ass. So did you get the question and the answers, or just the question?
Yes. Yeah.
We got the question and the answers, and mine is direct pressure.
Okay. Bobby, what do you say?
Same thing?
Is Randy on?
No, it's just three of us.
I thought I heard Randy a little while ago. Okay. Yes, it is going to be direct pressure. Only direct pressure will stop the bleeding. Tourniquets can cause circulation problems. Here's this. I'm going to say right now, EMS, paramedics, they hate tourniquets. And they'll tell you, never use a tourniquet, but you know how to use one, depending on where you're at. So, if you're out in the woods and you're in the middle of a desert or whatever, you would use a tourniquet, but you've got to use it properly. But like I said, you have to have hit an artery that's the only time you would really use a tourniquet. But and you have to do it properly. But yes, it is direct pressure, and you don't want to. But yeah, you and this says you will.
That was a close one. I thought I was out of chocolate chips. I was going to have to hurt someone.
Okay, a certificate of achievement. Woohoo! We got a 71 out of 100. I disagree with a couple of those answers, but, you know. All right, let's go see if we got another one. Okay, I don't want to go back to the first question.
Okay, come on.
I want another one. Practice test. Hold on. I'm just looking for this had a bunch of different tests, and I wanted to go back. Okay. I'm not creating my own quiz, by the way. I am not doing that shit. Can you survive if the world is ending in 2025? Let's find out. So if the world's going to end in a couple years, let's see if we're going to survive. So let's start our test. I'm dead. How long can you run? Not. Seriously, apparently this is, I could barely run for 30 seconds or else I get heartburn. I can run for 10 minutes having to catch my breath. I can run for 20 minutes straight. I can easily run for 45 minutes to an hour. I'm dead. So what do you guys think their ridiculous answer is going to be?
Probably three.
The 20 minutes straight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. But okay, hold on a second. Oh, no, no. This is going to see if we're going to survive or die. So this isn't trivia. Okay. I thought it was a trivia. But we're going to see if we're going to die or survive. If there's any zombie questions and it's the Walking Dead zombies, yes, I can survive. But if it's World War Z, I'm dead because I can't run for shit. That's when you start throwing friends in front of.
I have no idea. I haven't actually ran for, I don't even know how long. So I have no idea how long I'd be able to run.
I could do the airborne shuffle, which is basically a jog. I could probably do that for like 10 minutes, and that's it. I used to do it for the miles that we used to do. We did a 10-mile run around boats, and I actually did pretty well. But anyway, how long can you hold your breath? Or can you hold your breath for over a minute? I can't even hold it for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, or I can hold it for 2 minutes. Bobby, what do you think?
The same.
What? 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to see if you can hold your breath for 2 minutes. Well, you were a Navy SEAL, so you had to hold your breath, right?
I could hold it for five.
Good. Yeah, that's what's wrong with you. Can you jump out of an airplane and hit the ground in perfect shape? Dude, know what? The hell no. That's the answer. What? Hell no. I think it's easy peasy lemon squeezy as getting off my bed. We're going to go with hell no. These aren't trivia. These are going to see if we're going to live or die. In an apocalyptic situation. This is a hard one now. Can you see a family member die and keep going? Yes, I will probably be joining them. No way, I would cry as hell. And what can I do? I will have to keep moving on.
Three.
Me too. I mean, you can't help them. I would cry for a moment, but that would be it. I mean, you can cry later. Do you think you can go without food and water for more than a day?
Yep.
Their choices. What? Really? I think so.
No.
Yeah, anything for survival. Without food, I can go on, but without water, I don't think so. Well, guess what? You can. but we're going to go anything for survival. I don't know if anyone's ever been in that situation, but you can go without food, but water, you can't, but...
I do that all the time.
Do you think you can kill... Yeah, and that's just
that
it.
I get sick of cooking or sick of eating, and then I forget, and then I end up saying, oh, shit, and then grab a handful of chocolate chips.
I've gone 11 days with just having a few bites of food here and there and water because, one, I was sick as shit. And, that doesn't happen very often because my fat ass really could tell. Do you think you can kill animals for survival? Here's your answers. Man, do I have to? That won't be needed. Yeah, I guess so if I have to, or yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, if I have to.
Because, yeah. How long can you swim? Up to 5 minutes? Depends. I can't say. Up to 15 minutes, up to 30, or around an hour?
Around an hour.
No idea.
Yeah, here's the thing. Are they talking an hour straight or treading water? I mean, it doesn't, it's not really specific, but I can do it for an hour. That I do know, because the buoyancy. Do you have essential disaster management training? This is the reason why we go through these, not these ridiculous things, but all the survival stuff we do, it's to help prepare our people. So I know a lot of times, like now, we're just bullshitting and stuff, but that's why we do these. So here's their answers. Does that even matter during an apocalypse? Well, yeah. No, is that even a thing? No, but I know about it. I've seen videos and documentaries, and yes, I have. But I know we all have, so we're going with yes. Sorry, I took your answer. So
I forgot what the question was.
Okay. All right, now let's see if we would survive an apocalypse by 2025. All right. Oh, my God, they asked you, you are a god. You can certainly survive any attacks that will happen. You have the strength and confidence. I'm sorry to tell you that you will be alone on Earth with nothing but ruins. Have fun. So basically, in all honesty, in all seriousness, it does pay to practice survival. Because God forbid, if anything really does happen, you're going to have to know how to find water. You may not have electricity. And guess what? Back in the little house of the prairie days, they did not have electricity. Have an EMP go off. Boom, there goes all power, all communication. You ain't going to have shit. So your vehicles are going to be down. So like I said, we've done these over and over again, and it's important. Know how to fish, know how to camp, know how to do your water. I mean, all of it. It really does matter. Let's see what other quizzes. Okay, well, that's all the survival quizzes. So let's go into, where is that? I know we finished the world book. Okay. So I got this really cool book, and yes, we've gone over it twice, and I'm going to go over it, finish. It's called First Aid, Survival, and CPR. We skip CPR because it's kind of hard to keep CPR on the radio. Really is.
Yep.
Because you got to see it. Go to your local fire department, the Red Cross. Well, the Red Cross sucks. So if you need, and I'm not kidding, if you need a CPR for a job, go to the American Heart Association because jobs are not taking the American Red Cross. Even though it's the same one, they're not accepting it. So if you're in the medical profession, I did it by accident because I did, they did not have the American Heart Association locally where I'm at. So that's how I left out. And my job was like, yeah, okay, fine. We'll accept it. And then whenever they come back around, they do the American Heart Association. But you can take, here's the thing, you can take the test online, but you need that hands-on training for CPR. And I hate to say this, they do not teach first aid anymore, or at least not here, because all we were taught was CPR for infants, children, and adults. They did not teach us first aid. So you could go online. I got this book from Barnes & Noble, I think, or Books A Million, and I paid a big whopping $31 for this little tiny book. But it's waterproof. And it lasts. And it's a little flip book. And it's pocket size. So you can stick it in your first aid bag, your survival bag, whatever you want. So, where the hell? Hold on. That's CPR. You said we were skipping. Well, yeah. Sorry, guys. I lost my page. This is what happens when you're not paying attention. Medical emergencies. Oh, my pages stuck together. That's all. Sorry. I'm just having a brain fart. I'm just like, wow, what the hell. So we're going to start with appendicitis. First of all, if you're in an apocalyptic situation or a natural disaster and you have there are certain situations you can't do shit about, and I hate to say it, because appendicitis, you need surgery. Straight up, you need surgery. So it's a small, your appendix is that little small sac in the, that's attached to the large intestine. And if it's blocked, it could swell and become infected, and it's called appendicitis. So a lot of times with appendicitis, it's confused with the flu, the stomach flu, and it really is. When my youngest brother, he got it when he was 5 years old, his ruptured. And he almost died. So this is why it's important to pay attention. So some of the symptoms are pain in the lower right abdomen, nausea, vomiting, low fever, and constipation. Don't give the person anything to eat or drink. Don't use laxatives or pain medication. You have to get to a doctor. You have to have surgery. And they'll do the CAT scan, MRI, or whatever. But the problem is, if it's ever in an emergency situation where everything crashes, goes down, and you're not, the person will end up dying because that appendix ruptures, you die. So there's a, unless you happen to have a doctor friend who happens to have ways to intubate and all that shit and have someone with access to drugs, but yeah, you have to have a hospital setting to take care of that. So for diarrhea, there could be a lot of different things for you to get diarrhea. Medications cause diarrhea. Illnesses cause diarrhea. Foods cause diarrhea. So that's why you pay attention. If you're trying anything new, try it like and not have anything else, because that way you'll know if you're allergic to it or not, or have any type of reaction. So, but anywho, you could have a bacterial or parasitic infection from contaminated food or water, irritable bowel syndrome, celiac, inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis or ischemic colitis, any of those, like I said. They're not curable. It sucks. But you can manage your life with it. So mild, loose, runny stool. If it's serious, you'll have a lot. And they, like they, someone said, a little diarrhea won't hurt. No, but a lot will kill you. So the thing is, I know we've discussed this before at one point, and some doctors will tell you one episode of loose stool is not considered diarrhea. I believe Phil said it was what? Shit, I can't remember what he said. The last GI doctor that I had told me you would have to have at least 6 or 7 in a day. That would be considered, because you could have loose stool for anything. Antibiotics can give you diarrhea. So, treatment. Don't give any food for several hours until the person feels better, because sometimes what it is your body's purging whatever's in your body out. It's not supposed to be there. It's trying to purge it out. And so if you have diarrhea, just say you're going and you're just going, and it goes from soft to like turning on the water faucet, and, you know, that sucks. So you stop eating. So because everything you eat is just going to keep coming out as diarrhea, so stop eating. You won't die after a day of not eating, because that's how you're going to do it. And then once you start feeling better, I'm asking you go with the brat diet, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast, everything bland. Try to match the fluid intake, estimated fluid loss. This is a problem for a lot of people. And this happened to me quite a bit. It actually ended up in the hospital because I couldn't take in enough fluid to match what was coming out. I was literally going 14, 15, 16 times in a day. And I could not keep up with the fluid, the water, the Gatorade, the Powerade, all of that. And I couldn't. And so I ended up in the hospital, get fluids and gut rest. So if you can't, and if we're in a situation where you have no access to urgent care or hospital or doctor, hopefully you have somebody who can do IVs. And yes, there is, you can make IV fluids. We've gone over this plenty of times. And they actually make videos on it. They have supplies, but it has to be made in a sterile environment, unfortunately. So, but you could take things like Imodium to help block it up. And if you do end up with diarrhea, do not take Max Citrate, because that just makes it worse. Dysentery. It's awful. Dysentery is a painful infection of the digestive system that results in severe diarrhea containing mucus and blood. The typical cause is consumption of unsanitary water or foods containing microorganisms that damage the intestinal lining. And there's two major types of dysentery, amoebic and bacillary. So amoebic dysentery is caused by a single-celled microscopic parasite living in your large intestine. Bacillary dysentery is caused by a variety of bacteria, like Salmonella, Shigella, and E. coli. Do you guys ever watch, that Survivor show, Naked and Afraid? Do you guys ever watch Naked and Afraid?
Yeah.
You see that one where the guy, he knew better, but they didn't have access to water, and the water was clear, but he still drank it. He ended up with dysentery, and I can't remember how long he lasted. And he actually had to quit, and he lost like 40 or 50 pounds, I think it was. I can't remember. But, yeah, so that's why it's important. Just because your water's clear doesn't mean it doesn't have bacteria in it, because bacteria is microscopic and you can't see it. And with dysentery, you get that high fever, chills, abdominal pain, cramps, bloating, fatigue, and vomiting. Pretty much it's all the same. It's just to the severity of it. Maintain fluid intake using rehydration or sports drinks. But you will need to seek medical treatment of it. Has anybody ever had gallstones?
Nope.
Nope? You're lucky. I had them and didn't even know it. They actually caused my my gallstones actually caused my gallbladder to rupture. Basically, a gallstone is pretty much the same thing as a kidney stone, except one's in your gallbladder, one's in your kidney. But it's a sac-like organ. Your gallbladder is just a tiny little organ. You do need it, but you can live without it. So severe pain in the right upper portion of the abdomen. It would actually radiate to your right shoulder. It can. Pain radiates. And when you take a deep breath, it hurts. Also, if you have pancreatitis and you take a deep breath, that hurts. Because the pain's on the other side. Basically, avoid eating or drinking anything and seek immediate care. Let me tell you something. I lived with gallstones for 8 years until I couldn't. My whole right side of my stomach would swell, and everything I ate, certain foods like green peppers, onions, different things like that, would irritate the shit out of my stomach, and I would get sick. And so that's when I said enough's enough, went to a GI doctor, and they did the catfish diet, so they call it catfish diet. And when your body reacts, because it thinks it's having a reaction from, like, your gallbladder's going bad, and that's how they know. And, yeah, mine ruptured from the gallstones. My gallstones are the size of walnuts. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen a walnut, but those are huge. And that is bigger than your gallbladder. Oh, shit, we didn't stop and do our little... Bobby, are you still on, or are you napping?
Free beer.
Free liquor.
Yeah, I know. We forgot to stop and do our little thing in the middle. For those of you who just kind of caught on, you missed the trivia at the beginning, but I couldn't find any more trivia for survival or the ones that we've already gone over. But if you do you have the suicide hotline number, by the way?
I don't.
Would you have it? Well, hold on a second. I think I still have it. Oh, there it is. So, if you ever feel depressed, you know, or suicidal, or homicidal, for that matter, there's always someone that you can talk to. The suicide hotline is 1-800-273-8255. You can always call 911. You could go to the local ER, call the police department, fire department. There's always somebody around that you can talk to. Don't ever think that you're alone, because you're not. So, and if somebody ever comes to you and says, you know, they feel suicidal or anything, you know, don't begrudge them, don't belittle them, listen to them, and you help them find help. Never leave a person alone. Because alone is, honestly, it's the most dangerous place for someone who's suicidal. It really is. So, yeah. So, anywho, also, we have a store with our Facebook page. Bobby, you can go ahead and tell people about that. You do it all the time.
Yep. It's all lowercase letters, www.defenders7.com. We have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store. And any donations we bring in goes back to our communities throughout all 50 states in the time of need. So purchase something, donate to us. Help us to help you and your community in time of need. And also, on the same note as the suicide hotlines, if you go to our national page, If you don't feel like talking to strangers and you want to talk to somebody that's a veteran, our numbers are listed at the top of our page underneath announcements. And as usual, and as always, your call would be confidential.
Absolutely. There's always someone that will listen. So,
that's why secrets are safe with me.
Oh, see, here's the thing. Secrets are safe for me because I got the mind of a freaking goldfish.
Yep.
I will forget. So even if you, I'm not saying that I'm not going to listen. What I'm saying is I will probably forget all your deepest, darkest secrets. So I probably would. I got short-term memory loss. Like, I feel like Dory.
Yep.
So allergies. Everybody knows what allergies are, right? You know what? Name some common allergies that people have.
Hay fever.
Allergic to work.
That's you.
you know that? Yeah, allergic to work. There are some people that are allergic to work. Dust, mites, pollen, cats, dogs, food, medicine. So there's so many different mm-hmm. things that people are allergic to.
Insects.
Bullshit. Yes, insects. Shellfish, iodine, and like I said, medications. Some of the biggest ones, honestly, are penicillin and some of your pain meds. A lot of people are allergic to morphine, like me. Some, believe it or not, I've heard some people be allergic to Tylenol. Some are allergic to aspirin. Now, remember what we've said before. If someone says, oh, my God, I'm allergic to this. Okay, there's a difference between an allergic reaction and an allergy. Hold on a second. Hold on, guys. One of my patients is calling me. Okay. So remember, anaphylactic reactions are true allergies. The throat swelling, the tongue swelling, you can't breathe, the welts and things like that. That's true anaphylactic allergy. A reaction could be internal, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, a rash. Bobby, you're allergic to strawberries, right?
I was.
No, what happened when you ate strawberries?
My tongue swelled up and blocked my airway.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, okay. So you had a real allergic reaction to it. Okay. My son used to be allergic to red dye number 40. Red dye 40 is in freaking everything. Foods, drinks, medications, candy, pretty much all candy has red dye number 40. Red dye number 40 is not good for the person, for anybody. Okay. And so his type of allergic reaction, he had a hard time breathing, but his tongue didn't swell and his throat didn't swell. He went into an asthma attack, but he also had red welts. And you know, like if you slap the shit out of someone really hard, you leave that handprint and it raises up. Well, he would do that, but it's called urticaria, and it welts up and blotches all over his skin. Well, see, with him, we used to have to carry an EpiPen and Benadryl and all that cool shit, but we desensitized him, and he went freaking 10 years without having any red dye. It's very hard. Red dye number 40 is very hard to avoid. But now he doesn't have a problem. So for some things like that, you can desensitize and not have that problem. Other times, no can do, Fred. It does not matter if you stop taking it or eating or whatever for 50 years. And on that day after 50 years you take it, it could probably kill you. So yours, that's a true anaphylactic reaction. But everything has side effects. Nausea, vomiting, constipation, diarrhea. Pretty much do everything. I'm going to get the shirt, and I'm going to get it made. everything. Pretty much everything has that. And those are called side effects. And so that's why people, when they say they're allergic to it, ask them, what kind of reaction do you get when you take it? Because I know Phil has brought it up quite a bit. We've talked about it, about the different reactions that people have to medication. So, a lot of times Benadryl, Claritin, what's some other allergy medication? Shit. Benadryl, Claritin, Flonase for your nose. There's so many different things. A lot of people, they even have your eye drops. When your eyes, like people that are allergic to animal dander or pollen, and it gets in your eye and it gets all irritated, the Visine eye drops for allergies, they have those. You could even, let's just say you have the hay fever and you know all that lovely green pollen that gets all over your car in springtime? You could use nose spray to clean out your sinuses. But when you do, blow your nose easy, not hard, because you'll make it swell up and then you can't breathe. Watch out for nose sprays like Afrin. It's medicated and you should only use it for 7 days. Because you can get what's called a rebound effect, and it could be worse than what it was before you started. All right, we already went over anaphylaxis over and over again, and we were skipping childbirth because I've never delivered as they call them, crotch critters, so I know nothing about it. But I will keep this because it's got little cool color pictures on how to deliver a little brat. I do not know how to deal with that, though. I'm not going to talk about something I know nothing about. We've gone over dehydration. And we're going to go over actually one of these nights on our Medical Tuesday over, because it's getting close to the summer, heat stroke, heat exhaustion, and all of that cool stuff. We're going to go over that again. We feel it's really important for people to understand and know what it is. Because I don't know about anybody else, I've had a heat stroke before, and now my body is intolerant to hot and cold weather because it jacked up my hypothalamus, and I have issues with both hot and cold. And if the world could stay at happy, like, between 60 and 75, life would be good. I'm just saying, which we know it can't. So, But dehydration, everybody knows, you can have dehydration from, one, not drinking enough water, period. You could be sick. When you have a fever, your body heats up and you get dehydrated from that. You can get dehydrated from being outside. You can get dehydrated from doing too much activity, strenuous activity. What else? What are some other ways that you get dehydrated? Not trivia, but it's asking questions. This is the participation section.
Hardcore exercising.
Yep. You could get dehydrated going fishing. If you're out in the sun. Mm-hmm. Yard work. gardening.
You can get dehydrated. My body. Pretty much good. Anything.
Anything could dehydrate you. Believe it or not, that's what I was talking about. Too much salt. And that's why I questioned that about the one with the dehydration. But too much alcohol could dehydrate you. Too much sodium can dehydrate. That's why you stick it in little amounts. I'm trying to think of what else can dehydrate. Some medications can dehydrate you. So you have to be careful. And once you get to a point where, and you know you're in danger, if you stop sweating and your eyes are dry, your mouth is dry, which means you are in severe dehydration mode, and water is no longer the go-to for stopping it. The only way you're going to use, the only way that water is going to work is if it's in an IV and you get IV fluids. Because like we said, you have to, once you get to that point, you do your electrolytes and things like that. And now what they're saying, even like your Powerade, Gatorade, those other sports drinks besides Powerade and Gatorade. Isn't there another one?
I think so. I can't remember what it's called.
I know there's Body Armor, and that has electrolytes. You're going to want to watch the sugar. If there's too much sugar, it will cause, it can cause that diarrhea. And that's why when you get, like, the stomach flu or diarrhea in general, you want to do sugar-free because too much excess sugar can cause even more. So that's why you got to watch out for those. That's why I do the sugar-free ones. But it has other electrolytes. And then if you get to the point where you stop sweating, you've got to get to the hospital. And they'll do IV fluids.
Then you got them people that don't sweat.
True. And there are people that don't. My daughter's
very, a girl I used to work with is like that. She don't sweat.
Yeah, my daughter hates it. She can't stand it.
And she wears shorts all year round, 365 days a year.
And see, people like that have to worry about it because of them not being able to sweat, because that's how your body – and you have to watch out. When you sweat, that's your body's natural thermostat. It's a natural way of cooling down. And so I used to panic, especially when I was in the military, when I was in basic training, and we would run, and when we did PT and all this other stuff, I'd start smelling ammonia. And I'd freak out because I always knew if you smell ammonia when you're sweating, oh, my God, it's your kidneys. Well, guess what? If you don't have kidney problems and you're exercising a lot, that's okay because you're burning the fat. You're burning it out, and that's why it comes out as ammonia smell. So don't always flip out. But, yeah, that is one of the signs of your kidneys having problems is smelling ammonia. Yeah, I didn't know that, which is really funny because I've been a nurse for 10 years, but here's the thing. If you don't practice everything, you're not going to know everything. And I flipped out. I freaked out, and I went to sick call, and that's when they're like, oh, yeah, that's all that means. And they ended up checking my blood work anyway. But that's all it is. So, but just be careful, you know. Diabetes. A person with diabetes either doesn't make enough insulin or can't use it effectively. It's a hormone. We've gone over this. It's something I did not know. Like I said, that Phil had corrected me on. I did not know if you were insulin dependent, it actually can be reversed. I did not know that. I thought, and that's what I was always told. Once you go down that road, it cannot change. But I guess it can.
On diabetes?
So hyperglycemia, huh?
On diabetics?
Oh, you were on the show that night.
Yeah, I was on it. I think it depends on what kind of diabetic you are.
Well, yeah, he was saying once you get become insulin dependent, I see, that's what we were told. Now, like I said, things change over the years. They find other ways. But yeah, you can, and I didn't know you could reverse it. Now, I did know that I've had a lot of patients who are on glucophage, metformin, and all of those, and they lost a lot of weight. They controlled theirs with diet, and they no longer need the metformin or glucophage or whatever the 5,000 different drugs there are, and I did not know that. And not all fat people are diabetic. I have quite a few obese patients that are not diabetic, and I got a bunch of skinny ones that are. So it's not always true, but it's not always wrong. It's like I said, it depends on each person. You know what? A marathon runner can still drop dead of a heart attack.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is what it is. When it's your time to go, it's your time to go.
I was just going to say that when your number's up, your number's up.
Yeah, and that's why I no longer, I'm not worried about it. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to do what I have to make an attempt to stay healthy. But I have issues, like a bad back, and so I have to work around that. So, you know, do what you can. So anyway, hyperglycemia is when your body puts up too much insulin. And, it's excess of sugar in your blood, my bad, not insulin. It's when there's too much sugar. And then, so the amount of sugar at the rate at which it accumulates will determine associated with symptoms, and which is called DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis. And that is when your sugar gets way too high. I have seen patients with DKA, and their sugar was 1,200, 1,500, and I actually took care of a patient. He said, and it was true, I thought it was full of shit, but he was right. He had gone into DKA about 11 times in his life. How's he still alive? Don't know, which is why he lost a leg. Because diabetics, they start losing body parts. Usually it starts with their toes and ends up to the knees or higher. So, but anyway, with some of the symptoms, it's confusion, weakness, rapid breathing, and rapid pulse, excessive thirst, usually for water. And that's why I always panic. I'm like, oh, my God, I want too much water. No, it's because your body needs it. But when they say excessive thirst, they mean they cannot get enough water in their body. Frequent urination, nausea, loss of consciousness, coma, and that says a blood sugar of greater than 180, that's a lie for a DKA. That's bullshit. They're talking hundreds, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, and higher. 180, I've seen people with a blood sugar of 150. But your blood sugar is supposed to be between 70 and 100. You're okay if it's 110, 120. A lot of doctors don't do anything until it's 150. But that's a lie. That's not a DKA at 180. Also, something else I did not mention. If you smell fruity pebbles when you sweat, your blood sugar is extremely high. When you urinate, if you smell fruity pebbles, I kid you not, I'm not lying, you will smell fruity pebbles, and that's exactly what it smells like. Your sweat or your urine. I thought it was crazy, and until one day I actually had it up in a nursing home patient, and you could smell it, and I was like, holy shit, they're right, and it really does. If you guys have ever smelled fruity pebbles, how sweet it smells, that means there's sugar. That means there's sugar freaking through the roof. And you know what's so funny is a lot of diabetics don't even know their blood sugar's high. Because your body becomes accustomed to it, unfortunately. Same thing goes for high blood pressure, believe it or not. And that's not a good thing. So the treatment is you need insulin or your medication. Insulin works faster. For some unknown reason, they don't do a whole lot of sliding scale insulin here in Kansas. Everyone's on all this other medication. And you know how a lot of diabetics will have to give, like, so many units if their blood sugar's over 250, they'll have to get so much, like, the Novelin in or they don't do that here. So I don't know if it's a thing of the past or what. So hypoglycemia means your blood sugar's too low. So, and see, in all honesty, this is my own personal opinion, but I believe hypoglycemia is a lot more dangerous than high blood sugar because your blood sugar can go up and up and up and up to the hundreds, over 1,000 by the time you hit DKA. But guess what? Your blood sugar could only go so low before you die. 70 is the lowest. The lowest mine has ever been is 42. Now, that's pretty damn low. At that point, my vision was blurry, and I was really off balance. And so once that gets to, like, 20 and 30 and lower, you're close to death and becoming unconscious. So at that point, you know, everyone says drink orange juice. Well, okay, you can, as long as the person's conscious. You don't want to give them anything to drink or anything like that if they're unconscious, because they'll aspirate and they'll die. But the thing with the orange juice is your blood sugar will go up, but it only lasts for like 15 to 20 minutes. You want to do a complex carb. And that's usually your peanut butter crackers, your graham crackers and skim milk, a cheese sandwich, things like that. A Snickers will actually do it. But you could also do a sugar packet. If the person becomes unconscious, you could take a sugar packet and put it under the tongue because your body will absorb it. Or you could even do a little bit of honey or syrup. You just have to put it under the tongue or in their cheek. And when the sugar gets up enough, then you have them eat something. And a brittle diabetic is, and those are hard to treat. And not a whole lot of people are brittle diabetic, which means their sugar can tank and then shoot up to into the hundreds just as fast as it drops. So they actually have both. And I've only had two patients in 22 years that was a brittle diabetic. So, and they're very hard to treat. So earache. Anybody ever have an earache? I'm sure everybody has at one point or another in their lifetime.
Good old swimmer's ear.
Besides, there's ear infection, vertigo, because your equilibrium is off. When you're going into heights, if you're in an airplane, your ears pop, all that cool shit. So they're common in kids, and a lot of times, I don't know, my oldest was close to having tubes put in their ear, which we never did, but that poor kid had an ear infection. She got rid of it, and then a month later, she got another one, got rid of that, and another one. I think she had like 7 in 1 year. And the doctor's like, look, if she gets one more, putting tubes in. And she never got an ear infection ever again.
Huh.
She's 33 now, 89, whatever. She's 17 years younger than me. And I'm 51 on Tuesday. So do the math. Because I'm having a brain fart right now. But anyway, until she was 2 years old, she would have 5, 6, 7 ear infections. And she has not had one since she was 2 years old. So
wow,
that's another big thing. Yeah, and so I think my youngest only had 1 or 2. My son never had any, little asshole. He never had any freaking ear infections. Not like a good old-fashioned ear infection and have your kid puke right in your hair. Because that's what she did. But basically, it's pain and swelling or redness or behind the ear. Fever, you can have hearing loss. And don't forget, you could have, besides swimmer's ear, And that's, there's nothing more annoying than shaking your head and you can hear something rattle in your head and it's not your brain.
That's Bobby every day.
That's Bobby. I hate that. I hate that when I go swimming or whatever and you can hear it and it literally sounds like something's rattling around in your ear, between your ears. I'm like, I can't stand this. But I just use really, really warm water in my hand, put a cup in my hand, put it in my ear, and then let it sit just a second, and then tip my head, and all the wax comes out, and boom, and Bob's your uncle, and it's gone. But
I do that ear candling.
So, oh, you do that? You know, people say that's disgusting. I've seen it.
So.
It is. It's really gross. Does it work?
It works. Oh, yeah. It works beautifully. My daughter did it once. My daughter did it once, and she pulled a ant out of her ear.
Don't piss in your ear. That's an old wives' tale. People, they say, well, I'm pissing your ear. You piss in my ear, and we're going to have problems. And I don't know where they got that from. But it's an old, you know, wives' tale. Go piss in your own ear. So anyway, Stumer's ear is an irritation or infection of the ear canal. It usually happens after water, sand, or dirt gets inside your ear. Nothing more irritating than having dirt in your ear. I've seen videos where they have pulled roaches, ants, things that don't belong in your ear. I've seen a spider being pulled from someone's ear. You know what? It creeps me out when I sleep, and it makes me want to just put cotton balls in my ear so nothing gets in my ears at night. That's why I get paranoid about that shit. But some of the symptoms is pain, itching, and a full feeling, redness, and swelling in both the inner and outer ear canal. And you can also, if you ever see blood coming out of your ear, or a clear, sticky fluid, take your ass to the hospital. Because a clear, sticky fluid, it could be cerebral spinal fluid. And that's not good. That shit belongs in your spine or in your brain, not your ear. So, yeah. Fainting. There's many a plethora of reasons why somebody was faint. So basically, it's a brief consciousness followed by loss of consciousness followed by reawakening. I would hope so, or what we call fainting. There's a bunch of reasons. Your blood pressure can drop and cause what we call syncope. And you boom, you fall, and you pass out. Too much pain can cause you to faint, believe it or not.
When I see my own blood... When I see my own blood,
you know what?
I
my oldest, I laugh at this. I think it's funny, but it's sad. She passes out when she sees her blood being drawn. She has passed out. But she's going to nursing school in January. And I'm like, she's like, it's only when I see my blood. If I see somebody else's, it's okay.
That's like, how I am.
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know what, nurses have their own vices of what they can't stand. Mine is phlegm and puke. I can't stand either one. That just, I'm like, you know, that poor woman on TikTok who gags real easy and she's laughing while she does it, but she just does it because it's funny. But I'm like, or that little kid who thinks, her mom put chocolate pudding, and she was sitting on the toilet, and she grabbed, and she put the chocolate pudding on her kid's hand. And you ever see that video where she's like, she goes, is this poop? Is this poop? And, yeah, there are people like that. And so, okay. So anything can make you faint. Smells. Just about anything can make a person faint. But if you do faint for non-specific reasons, like seeing blood, okay, that sucks. Or, you know what I'm saying? If there's no underlying reason why, you need to get checked. Like I said, it could be your blood pressure. It could be your sugar. It could be anything. So, a person becomes pale, weak, or dizzy. They begin to sweat and lose consciousness. I did. I began to sweat, and I had to play it off when I was in nursing school, because if you pass out while you're doing clinicals, you fail, automatically fail nursing school. At least that's the way they used to do it. And so I had to play it off. I was going to, like I said, it was plus. I'm sorry, and it was just, someone had a massive absence, and I was going to pass out. And I had to play it off that my sugar dropped. But no, it's because I saw something that it just...
That was a close one. It just kaboomed. It made my camper rock.
Is it thunder and lightning?
Oh, yeah. It just let loose just like 5 seconds ago.
Oh, well, shit. You know, I keep getting tornado warnings for places, and I don't even friggin' live there. I'm like, I don't live there. I don't care. Did you see that? Oh, shit. Did you see that tornado in Michigan? Yeah, there was a tornado in a trailer park. Demolished the whole trailer park.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I saw that.
Yeah, I'm gonna see who's got. We'll do our useless weather here. We got Lorna.
Back home, they've had like 3-4 hailstorms in a week.
There's a bad system right now. It's going from the corner of Arkansas, and it's going straight up through Little Rock to Jonesboro. I mean, it's a massive storm. Going through Memphis, Jackson, Nashville. I mean, it's a massive storm. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
We ain't getting squat. Oh, but guess who's getting snow? Fucking Colorado.
Oh,
Colorado's getting snow. I shouldn't laugh because I was at the Grand Canyon in May a couple years ago, and the North Rim had to be closed because it fucking snowed. Go figure. They have abnormal weather. Fever, we've gone over fever quite a bit. Fever can be caused by anything. Illness. Whatever. But here's the thing about fever. Most people's temperature is 98.6, somewhere between 98 and 98.8, not, you know, stuff like that. Mine, I'm like 95 to 97. Okay, 95 is like borderline hypothermia. It's normal for me. I run low. My dad ran low. So, and we call a low-grade temp 99.9. And I used to joke with my ex-husband, and I'm like, it's only 99.9. Because once you hit 101, I mean, 100, you're getting up there. What was it now? It's 101.5, I guess, is the, you know, that's when you really have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Fevers are not always a bad thing. It's just your body's way of fighting off whatever is in your body. So, but does it mean you're contagious? No, because it depends on what you have. Now, if you got a cold, pneumonia, bronchitis, some other infection, then yes, you are technically contagious when you have a fever. You really are. But if you have an abscess or something like that, no, you're not contagious because that's something that's stuck in you. But know your body. Do you guys know what your normal temperature is by any chance?
God, I haven't checked my temperature in, I bet you, 20 years.
Was yours ever like 98.6 or anything like that?
Yeah, I think if I can remember right, mine was like normal, like everybody else's, 98.6, 98.9, or 98.8.
Bobby, what's yours? Your norm?
Yeah, about 97.
So you know how you feel, like, see, like me personally, like, because I run low, and usually it's 97.4 is usually what mine is. Mine actually was like 93 the other day. And I'm going, I don't feel sick. But I think the only reason why is because I was sitting in my air-conditioned car, and I had to go into a facility, and you guys take the temp. And it was like, it started out as 90, then 92, then 93, and I'm like, what the hell? So I don't always trust those thermometers that you don't touch the skin, you know, the little radar guns. But anyway... when I hit 99, I start feeling run down. My body, I actually start feeling crappy. So, and you know, that's what I say. Pay attention to what your norm is. Because you will probably have this if you have an asshole for a nurse or a doctor that you happen to see. This is why it's good to keep an open mind. I would have to fight. And I'm like, no, I feel like shit. And my temp was 99.9. It really was. And before I knew it, it went from 99 to 103. And I was septic. I had an abscess from surgery that I had. I had my hysterectomy. And I was actually septic. And the doctor's like, holy shit. And so that's why it's good to know your body. And so when you have a fever and then it breaks, that's why you go into, you get those cold sweats and the chills. And you just profusely sweating, but it's cold because your fever broke. And that's how I knew that when I was in the hospital. And I kid you not, when your fever is that high, one, you're running the risk of burning brain cells, which is probably the reason why I've got the memory issues that I got. But anyhow, I was literally soaked. It looked like somebody just poured a cup of water or a pitcher of water on my hospital gown. I was soaking wet. Every time my fever broke, that's what would happen. But I actually had to call the nurse to come in my room, change the sheets and my gown because I was soaking wet. So, but like I said, you could get a fever from an abscess in your tooth, from anything. Anything could cause a fever. But it's not always detrimental. It's just your body's way of saying, hey, something's going on. Pay attention. But, you know, and something that I found out recently, when a person's dying, believe it or not, they could get a fever. I've had quite a few patients recently when they were dying, actively dying, right, like the last phases of dying, they actually had a fever of 101, 102. And that's normal. So, but does that mean you're dying? No, not unless you actually are. But that's what happens. So basically, the best thing, honestly, I don't recommend aspirin or anything like that, because I just don't care for aspirin, besides the fact of being a blood thinner. Tylenol is usually the best thing for fighting fever. Your Motrins, Advil, ibuprofen, all the same shit, different name. That works too, but that's mostly anti-inflammatory. But now, I don't know if you guys have noticed, I don't know if you guys had to do this. Oh, we got 5 minutes. Alternate Tylenol and Motrin when you can't get a fever to break, because that does work. So you give Tylenol and then, or you give Motrin and then 4 hours later you can give Tylenol and then 4 hours later you give Motrin again, and you just alternate it, and that will get rid of a fever depending on what it is. So sorry, I kind of shifted gears. there on the trivia, but I ran out of survival trivia. So I think we'd I'm going to, for the next couple of Saturdays, I think if probably got a few more, maybe three, we'll finish up this book and do that for survival. And I apologize for Tuesday's show. I did not get done with work until about 8 o'clock. It sucked.
Okay.
So by the time I got done, it was 6:30. Huh?
Okay, Weathers.
Oh, shut up, man. See, here's the thing. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. When Pat goes to work, I get up at 6, and I get ready, and I leave for work at 7:15. We're up to 7:15, 7:30, and I get there at a quarter to 8. We have morning meetings. Yay. Every fucking day at 8:15. And I work all day. And actually, I drove 250 freaking miles that day. I only had 5 patients, but I still had 250 miles. And I didn't get done until 6:30. But I still had to chart and put in orders, and all of that shit had to be done before Wednesday, because they do some kind of program every Wednesday in the middle of the night. They do some kind of bullshit thing, and if you don't have your shit turned in, you lose it. So that's why I had to cancel Tuesday's show. So Tuesday we're going to do COPD. This Tuesday.
Okay. Again, thank you for another great show, Ken. Thanks for being with us, Lorna.
Yep.
And God bless America. God bless our children. First responders, the missing, our military, veterans, and God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Oh, excuse me.